for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the FTN DataCast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here, joined, as always, by Mr. Tyler Lochner at Lochner NFL on the Twitter machine. So, Tyler, what a crazy weekend here. NFL draft in the books. You, a little bit of myself, Daniel Kelly did a lot of the live blog in rounds one, and then I was on stream throughout the weekend for rounds one, two, and three. And now we can kind of take a step back, look at everything that happened, and break it all down. We got a rookie mock draft in the process right now. How are we feeling? How are we doing?
That was a different draft, I guess is the word I would use. It was exciting. Lots of trades, obviously, the first night. A lot of veteran players negatively impacted, I think, that we weren't expecting to be. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but a good draft. I mean, I love the draft, and I also love after the draft, because now we can really start to analyze it because the players are on their new teams.
Yep, we are going to break down the majority of the fantasy relevant selections from the draft, the skill position players, how we view the rookies themselves, how they impact players around them, and everything like that. So you want analysis on the six receivers in the first round, we'll have that. The running backs that we saw in the second round, Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, we'll have that. We'll have, you know, some of the quarterback analysis, because that was, I think, the storyline, the fact that just the quarterbacks got pushed down and pushed down so rapidly. So we'll break all that down. But again, I'll have, you know, we're doing a rookie mock draft. We did one pre-NFL draft. Now we're in the process of the post-NFL draft mock. That'll be up early this week at FTN Fantasy. We're going to have a ton of stuff at FTN Fantasy. You know, rankings are being updated. Jeff Ratcliffe, Josh Larkey, myself. I mean, updating rankings, like, as news, you know, drops during the NFL draft. And then we're going to have a lot of, you know, analysis, takeaways and stuff from the draft, how players, veterans are impacted. So the content at FTN Fantasy this week, and of course, you know, until, you know, forever, honestly, is going to be amazing. So make sure you get signed up at FTN Fantasy today. Let's get into it, though, Tyler. I mean, let's start with that first round. Obviously, we saw six wide receivers selected. And I was talking to Chris Meany on stream, and I think they had the over of six receivers, and there was six on the dot after seeing six go in the first, like, what, 20 selections?
Yep.
And then I saw a report that the Packers went, you know, we'll talk about Christian Watson, but they actually tried to trade up to 32 to select Christian Watson, and Minnesota didn't trade that selection, so it was ended up at six and not over six. But the receivers, that was the storyline, at least on the offensive side of the ball. In round one, it started with Drake London, number one receiver off the board, goes to the Atlanta Falcons. And look, Drake London, really talented player. I think a lot of people had him as the wide receiver one in this class. But, you know, the offense isn't great, but he lands in a spot where he can see. I talked to Josh Larkey on stream. I think he projected him for like a 21-22% target share, which for a rookie receiver is very, very encouraging. He's going to pretty much dominate targets with Kyle Pitts. And then, I mean, we'll see what happens with, you know, when Ridley comes back next season. But where do you have Drake London right now? I think there you can make the case he's the 102 in rookie drafts. I think it's going to be a conversation between him and maybe Kenneth Walker. But Drake London, I think, is in line for, you know, a really productive, really heavily involved rookie season in Atlanta.
Yeah, he definitely is. I think the 20% market share projection from Larkey is absolutely reasonable. And that is, that's certainly high for a rookie, but it's a good spot for him to land in terms of opportunity. Like we've talked about, yes, the team is not great, but from a fantasy perspective, that might not matter that much because it might mean that they're, you know, behind and passing more often. So for dynasty, yeah, I think that I'm sure we'll talk about this. We'll say this for a lot of players, but I think London is completely fine at 1.02. I think if you're, you know, if you really need wide receiver help, I personally don't really have a problem taking him at 1.01. We might have some difference of opinion there, but I'm sure there's going to be lots of different ways you can rank these receivers for dynasty purposes. But I think most of them will have London as one of the top three receivers, regardless of order. So it's a good spot. We talked before the draft, a common comp for him was Mike Evans. I think Larkey said Michael Pittman was another comp mm-hmm. that he had for London. I think both of those are fair comps, and you know, he lands in a good spot. If or when Calvin Ridley returns, and if the team gets a quarterback, or if Marcus Mariota actually takes his, you know, shows that he can be a late career bloomer, I think that's unlikely, but it's always in the cards. It's a good spot for him to make an immediate impact. In terms of redraft, I do think London is draftable, but I don't think he's necessarily someone that you can bank on being an every week starter right away. I would peg him in the wide receiver 40 to wide receiver 45 range for a redraft, but mm-hmm. certainly in rookie drafts, I think he's a pretty safe pick in the top three. Where do you have him?
I was going to say, if I remember correctly, I put him in at wide receiver 39.
Right. Yep.
So a couple of players, let me ask who you would prefer in 2022. This again, redraft. We'll talk about it. Obviously, this is one of the storylines of the first round, and we can tie this in easily with the receivers. But Devonta Smith, Drake London. A lot more interesting now, obviously.
Yeah, it is a lot more interesting.
I have Smith at the moment two spots higher. So
I would probably still go Smith. I actually think the Eagles offense is going to be pretty awesome now, and I think Smith will benefit from that. Yep. But yeah, that's close. That's close. I'll take Smith.
What about, assuming no Deebo Samuel trade, Brandon Ayuk or Drake London?
Still Ayuk. I'm a big Ayuk stan.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that a couple weeks ago. One more. Let's do Drake London or Christian Kirk.
Ooh, I'll go Drake London there.
Yep, I have London higher as well.
Yeah,
I just think he's so exciting as a player and as a prospect. Like, talked about this last week with Larkey, but missed 8 games last season and still tied for the nation lead in contested catches with 17. He's sick. Really good after the catch, 6'5", 210. A bad football team we expect in Atlanta. Like, I think he could easily see like 130 targets this season. And I don't know if any other receiver has that type of upside from this rookie class. So Drake London, in my opinion, yeah, like if you are absolutely loaded at running back, I don't think taking Drake London at the 101 is completely out of the question mm-hmm. in rookie drafts. Let's go to the other receivers. Number 10 overall, the Jets take Garrett Wilson from Ohio State. And look, the Jets are doing what you're supposed to do, right? You have a second-year quarterback that you're trying to see if he can take that leap, and you obviously have seen some flashes from Zach Wilson in terms of arm talent, mobility, off-platform throws. You know, what have the Bills done? What have the Chargers done? What have the Bengals done? You just surround your franchise quarterback with talent, and the Jets now, we'll talk about some other players, but Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, they added two tight ends in the draft class. Like, they are doing what you're supposed to do. Garrett Wilson was my wide receiver one in this class with his incredible route running ability, you know, just you know, suddenness and smoothness. Now he's, you know, paired up with Elijah Moore and Corey Davis, and I don't want to say it's like overly crowded, but there's a lot of players in that offense now. Garrett Wilson, where does he kind of slide in for you among the rookie receivers, and what do you expect here in year one? Because like, it's kind of dangerous to say, but the Jets offense could be pretty fun if Zach Wilson takes that next step.
Dude, I am legit excited for the Jets offense, and I've been a lifelong Patriots fan, but
well, yeah, you guys had a terrible draft, so you can
separating from that.
You can't say that a terrible draft, because like with Belichick, like every player could just end up being an all pro. So
yeah, of course. I mean, from a value perspective though, I think you can certainly poke holes in it pretty easily. But yeah, no, I like what the Jets are doing. What you said is, they're just surrounding their young quarterback with the opportunity to be great. And that's what you like to see. I know Moore was not a first round pick last year, but I think he went 34th or 35th overall. So was basically a first round pick. And then they do it again with Wilson. You mentioned the other tight ends they drafted. We're going to talk about him. They also added Breece Hall, but this offense could take a really big step forward if these players are able to develop. Obviously, Wilson, quarterback Zach Wilson being the most important. As for where I rank Garrett Wilson post-draft among wide receivers, I think he would be my wide receiver 3 right now in Dynasty for rookies. I would have London ahead of him, and I would have I would have Treylon Burks ahead of him, but it's very close between all these players. It's funny, we were talking before the draft on the pod about how you can kind of mix and match, and everyone has slightly different order of these wide receivers. I don't really think that changed post draft, but I do think that Garrett Wilson landed in a spot that, yes, the Jets have not been good. Yes, Zach Wilson is not proven, but it is a spot that it certainly seems like an ascending offense, which is where you want to be.
Yeah, I think of the six receivers drafted in the first round, I think two of them have potential to be wide receiver threes in fantasy or better. And that, in my opinion, is London and Treylon Burks, we'll talk about. I think Jameson Williams, I think Garrett Wilson, I think Chris Olave and Jahan Dotson are all at wide receiver fours at best in their rookie season. But Garrett Wilson, obviously, like, it's not like he's walking into a situation like Drake London where there's so many targets available, right? You already have Elijah Moore there. You already have Corey Davis there. You have CJ Uzomah there, Tyler Conklin there. They're going to throw to both running backs plenty. So I think Garrett Wilson's probably going to be somebody that we could see maybe like how we saw Elijah Moore kind of get going the second half of the season last season. Like maybe we see that from Garrett Wilson down the stretch, but I kind of just pencil him as a wide receiver four to start and then you see what happens. But yeah, I mean, this is honestly just more of like, what do we think of Zach Wilson as like a, you know, I'm not saying Zach Wilson's going to be like a top 12 quarterback, but like, we always look for that quarterback being drafted outside the top 15 that you can just kind of pair with somebody. And if they hit, you can really hit. And because Zach Wilson showed some mobility. He had that crazy touchdown run against Jacksonville. It was like 50 yards. He's got the arm talent. And now all of a sudden he has legitimate players all around him on offense. So like Zach Wilson, like, what do you like? Did he rise? I mean, I feel like he had to have risen for you among quarterbacks. And again, not like you're penciling him in the top 12, maybe even not even top 15, but among quarterbacks, you know, consensus being drafted outside that top 15. I mean, there's got to be some upside here. And then again, if he takes that step, like he does have fantasy upside with his overall, and you know, he's going to throw deep balls. He's going to run a little bit.
I think if you're in two quarterback leagues, Wilson is on the map now. Certainly. I've been a big Wilson fan ever since, I think even before last year started. I've had really high hopes for him. I just think his skill set is unbelievable in this league. If he's able to piece it together, I think he can be as good as like a Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes in terms of production. I'm not talking like the Hall of Fame trajectory, but gotcha. from a fantasy profile, because he has that rushing ability like Allen does. Yeah, I don't think he's, to be clear, I do not think he's going to be as good of a quarterback as them from a real football perspective. But from a fantasy perspective, I think he can. I genuinely think he has the ability to be an elite, elite fantasy quarterback. Last year, I got rained on a little bit because his rookie year was genuinely pretty bad. And I think that that is a really bad sign. But I am happy that the Jets are giving him a genuine opportunity to see if he is... to see if he really does have that ability in him. So yeah, I've always been excited about Wilson. Last year, like I said, dampened my excitement a bit, but the draft they had in two quarterback leagues or super flex leagues, Wilson is definitely a late round target.
Let's go to 11 and 12 from the first round. Chris Olave, the Saints trade up quite a bit to move up to 11 to select Chris Olave. And look, like Chris Olave is one of my favorite players in this entire draft class, regardless of position. I don't know how I feel about this landing spot, because if Michael Thomas is good to go and is playing, like, we haven't seen Jameis with Michael Thomas much, if at all, but I feel like we're going to see 25 to 30% target share Michael Thomas. And Chris Olave is like, we know this team has massive holes at receiver after Michael Thomas. So it's not even a question, especially given the trade up and the draft capital. It's not even a question whether or not Chris Olave is the number two in this offense at receiver. He clearly is. But this team, we saw due to the Saints not having a backup running back last year until they brought in Mark Ingram. Like, Tony Jones was the backup. He got hurt. And we saw a lot of like 25 carry games from Alvin Kamara. The Saints were a massively run heavy offense. Jameis Winston, before he got hurt, averaged 23 pass attempts per game, which is like back when he was in Tampa Bay, it's like, oh, Jameis Winston averages 23 pass attempts per half. Like it's weird to see Jameis Winston but he played well in that role. He didn't turn the football over, and they limited the passing attempts from his entire offense. So now you have not only Michael Thomas, who we expect to see, I would say you would project him for at least a 25% target share, right? Alvin Kamara.
Definitely.
Alvin Kamara, while he probably doesn't get the 80, 90 catches we've grown accustomed to seeing, is still going to get, 50 to 60 at worst. So Chris Olave, I think Chris Olave in rookie drafts, you could see him go anywhere between the 105, 106 to the 110. I think he's even more 11, because we'll talk about some of the receivers, but I think there's going to be a lot of people who view Sky Moore higher, Christian Watson higher, and a lot of these other receivers that landed on offenses where they can not only see more volume, but might even be more consistently targeted, especially Green Bay. That receiver room is wide open. But
yeah,
I wish Chris Olave landed. My dream the entire offseason was Chris Olave to the Packers, Chris Olave to the Chiefs. It's not an awful landing spot. And we know Michael Thomas has missed time. And Jameis is a very good quarterback at, Jameis is a good quarterback in general, but he's also very good at, bringing receivers along with him for fantasy. Not going to be to the extent we saw in Tampa Bay, because the passing offense is different. But what do you make of Chris Olave? I will say this, a little spoiler, I'll have to write up on Tuesday or as soon as the draft's over. I had the 106, and I love Chris Olave, but I actually took Jameson Williams, who we'll talk about next, over Chris Olave, just because of the upside. But, I'm torn on this landing spot. I really am.
Yeah, I think of the first round wide receivers, Dotson, I think he's close to Dotson for me in the rankings, but of the first round wide receivers, him and Dotson are probably the ones I'm least excited about.
I agree.
And then, you mentioned Sky Moore and Christian Watson. I think you could count me in the camp of people who rank both of those players higher than Olave now post-draft. That's not to say that it's doom and gloom for Olave, though, but the Saints, this was the landing spot that surprised me just a little bit. I mean, yes, the Saints need wide receiver help post Michael Thomas, and who knows if Michael Thomas is even still going to be Michael Thomas anymore. There's no Drew Brees anymore, no Sean Payton anymore. He's missed so much time. But the Saints as a whole are a whole new team, right? Dennis Allen is the head coach now.
Right.
And he's been a defensive guy his entire career. So we might still see really low volume Jameis and a lower volume passing offense. Or we might see Jameis be Jameis again and just chuck it up a million times a game. We genuinely don't know what's happening in New Orleans this year. Olave is, I think he's a good fit in the offense, or the historical Saints offense, though. And you mentioned the wide receiver two position there is wide, wide open. So from that perspective, I really like him stepping in. But yeah, I like, I guess, how many would that be? 5, 6, 7. I think he's my wide receiver 8 at best among the rookies right now. 8 or 9.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch him. I just don't know how much volume this offense is going to have, especially if Michael Thomas and Kamara are healthy, because they are just going to see a ton of work.
Is there a chance Kamara gets suspended still?
There is. There definitely is. No idea.
How
that plays out, but I agree. Olave and John Dotson were easily, and it sucks because I love Olave, but they were easily my least favorite two landing spots among the first round rookies.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Jameson Williams, because the Lions are kind of building something here, man.
Real quick on Kamara, his hearing was moved to August 1st from April 25th. So that's a pretty big pushback. So I think that makes it pretty likely Kamara plays the season.
Okay. Jameson Williams and the Lions, this was very surprising to me, because they traded up to get up to 20 spots to get him, right? They were 32nd. They had obviously the second pick, and they also had 32nd. They traded 32, 34, and something else, I believe, to get up to 12 to take Jameson Williams. And adding elite talents like Jameson Williams it's not a bad move ever. But you can make the case the Lions, a team that has plenty of holes, pass catcher really wasn't on my high on my radar for them because you hit a home run with Amon-Ra last year. DJ Chark's on a 1-year deal. And again, the 1-year deal probably has a lot to do with it. You have Swift, you have Hockenson. But man, that's pretty telling to me. Everybody has talked about how if Jameson Williams is full health, you know, doesn't get hurt last year, he's probably the clear cut wide receiver one in this class. I think this fit is interesting, right? We know Jared Goff not going to take many shots down the field. In fact, 6.4 intended air yards per pass attempt for Jared Goff last year. That was worse than the NFL amongst qualified quarterbacks, worse than Big Ben, worse than Andy Dalton, worse than Tua. So he won't take many shots, but I think there'll be more this year because you have Chark, you have Jameson Williams, and this is still a top five offensive line. So what do you think of Jameis? I think it's a cop-out, but I think he's an elite best ball guy for this year. But in Dynasty, like I said, DJ Chark's on a 1-year deal. So I think I saw reports that like he'll probably be full speed, ready to go by October. So like you can kind of ease him in. And then all of a sudden you have 2-4-3 guys in Chark. Well, you know, Jameson didn't run the 40. You can pretty much lock he's a 4-3 guy. But then you have Chark, Jameson on the outside, 4-3 guys. You have Amon-Ra on the underneath. I like what they're building on offense. I really do. And I think Goff, they have an out from Jared Goff after this season, so they can get out from him and move on. And if they really hit, you know, get a high upside young quarterback or whatever in the draft, I mean, Jameson Williams, the ceiling could be higher than anybody in this class. We know that.
I actually really like this pick. I feel like I mentioned on a previous podcast that I'm like kind of a Detroit Lions believer now. I'm like kind of buying into their youth and their talent that they have. I really, really like this. I was surprised too. I didn't necessarily think that wide receiver was something they needed after adding Chark and Amon-Ra's breakout and just the fact that DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson are both excellent pass catchers. I didn't necessarily think it was something they needed, but I also love it when a team spends significant capital to get a player because that just, to me, shows that they really like that player. They plan to use that player. It's very unlikely that he goes into Detroit and is just forgotten, right? Unless he ends up being bad, which is always possible, right? That's always the dart throw with rookies, but I really like it. And I know that everyone makes fun of Jared Goff. You mentioned they have an out for him after next year, but I will say the last time Jared Goff was in an offense with a lot of young, talented players was 2008 on the Rams, and he supported several elite fantasy wide receivers. He had Robert Woods had 1,200 yards and 86 catches. Brandon Cooks, 80 receptions, 1,200 yards. And he had Cooper Kupp, who got injured halfway through the year, but Cooper Kupp was on pace for 80 receptions and 1,200 yards. That is a lot of wide receivers to support at a very elite rate. And that's not to mention Todd Gurley went nuclear that year as well. So I'm not saying that the Detroit Lions are going to be the 2018 St. Louis Rams, but I will say that the Rams were a laughingstock team before that happened. My point is it's possible for good players to emerge from the Detroit Lions. Amon-Ra is one of them. DeAndre Swift's another one. I think Williams is going to be a third one. And in terms of where I rank him for Dynasty, right now he's my wide receiver 4 among the rookies.
I think that's right around where I have him as well. I think, what do you think this does for Amon-Ra? Like, of course, the immediate reaction is, oh, Amon-Ra, it's over for him. Like, we have to remember, what if this time next year, Chark's not back, and it's just Jameson and Amon-Ra. Like, the way they complement each other is perfect. They're totally different receivers. Amon-Ra, like a 4.6, 4.7, 40, wins intermediate on out routes a lot. Like, it's why I loved him coming out. Like, he was such a good technician, great route runner, can give you some carries too. Jameson Williams, he's not just a deep threat. Like, he can get you on screen, slants. Like, he just gets open. He gets separation. But their play styles complement each other so well. So, like, I think, you know, for this year, if you want, like, and there's a chance, like we said, there's a chance Jameson Williams misses a lot of time in his rookie season. But, like, if anybody's worried about Amon-Ra in Dynasty, like, I love him already, so I'm a little biased. But, like, no, I don't really think this crushes him at all.
I don't even know if this hurts him, let alone crushes him. Mm-hmm. I mean, Amon-Ra's average depth of target last year was 7.06, which is really, really low. Just on the Lions, it was ninth among any player that was targeted at least 10 times. So I don't know exactly where Williams's ADOT will land, but it wouldn't even surprise me if it was almost double that, right? Like Josh Reynolds on the Lions last year was kind of their deep guy. He had a 13.6 average depth of target. I think we could see Williams land in that range. So yeah, they occupy completely different areas of the field. And Amon-Ra, his breakout was so clear and so sustained over the second half of last year that I'm not concerned about that. I mean, if adding DJ Chark didn't scare you off of Amon-Ra, then this shouldn't.
Right. Which I didn't even budge when they signed DJ Chark. So
this should, I mean, you could make the argument that this should make you like him even more just because it means that the offense has the chance to be more potent and get in scoring.
I mean, we've seen the, like, these elite deep threats. And I think Jameson Williams, barring injury, is going to be an elite deep threat in this league. Open up everything for the offense. So
he averaged 20 yards per reception last year.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. That's huge. Like, I think I saw a stat from PFF that he had like 40 like downfield catches last year where he had like over a step of separation. Like, just, he's ridiculous. He also averaged over 9 yards after the catch per reception. That was 6th in the nation. You know, 6th most deep yards. Like, he legitimately, there's a reason why most people viewed him as the wide receiver one before the ACL. So the Lions, again, moved up a lot to draft him. We'll see how much he plays in year one. But, you know, in terms of his rookie season, probably more of a best ball player. But I think this offense is really building the right way. And I'm not saying they're going to win the division because they probably won't. But, like, this team played hard every game last season, and now they have even more talent. So, like,
dude, Jets, Lions, 2025.
Wow. Super Bowl. How about that? Who would the quarterback be for the Lions then? Because if the Jets are in the Super Bowl in 2025, that means Zach Wilson home run. But that'd be interesting to see who the Lions is. I don't think it'd be Goff, but you never know. All right, let's keep going on to these receivers because, again, there were plenty of them. 16th overall to the Washington Commanders. They traded back, and they select Jahan Dotson, wide receiver from Penn State. I think it's pretty clear this was the least exciting, you know, spot among the first-round receivers. Dotson, player that was on that, like, round one, round two cusp for the entire offseason. Really good player, great hands, dominated as the clear one, you know, the clear alpha in Penn State's offense. A little undersized, but, you know, 4.43 speed, great hands. He had like a 2% drop rate last season. But this is going to be primarily a slot receiver in an offense that has a lot of uncertainty with Carson Wentz. Terry McLaurin is still the clear number one on this team. And I just don't think there's a massive ceiling for Jahan Dotson right now. Like, whereas I said, like, Jameson Williams and, you know, Garrett Wilson are, like, sliding as wide receiver fours, Jahan Dotson is not. Like, he's below that for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm also, you know, Carson Wentz is somebody that I have no belief in anymore. I will say this, though. The Commanders are returning only 71% of their targets from 2021. So I wrote a vacated targets piece last week. I actually wrote it before free agency, and then I updated it right before the draft. And only 71% of the targets on the Commanders are returning in 2022 compared to last year. And that's the fourth most vacated targets in the league. So for comparison, the Cleveland Browns lost the most targets. And then the Packers were second. The Cardinals and Commanders were tied for third and fourth most.
So crazy that Packers were second and they lost one player.
They lost one player. I know.
Well, they lost MVS, but that's true. Yeah, it's Adams. And we'll talk about that soon, but it's so crazy.
But that stat right there gives hope for Dotson to see decent volume this year. And I think that, you know, they had Dyami Brown last year who looked pretty good in the preseason, but was a complete wash in the regular season. Maybe he takes a step forward too. And
if Sam Howell starts, he will.
True. but I don't think there's a ton of competition for Dotson to quickly become their number two. They did return J.D. McKissic, and everyone at the moment is tied to Carson Wentz. So it's not an exciting landing spot. And I will say this, though, the Carson Wentz has bounced around teams, and it might not be too much longer before he either bounces out of the league or finally becomes a backup. I don't really understand why that hasn't happened yet, but there's a path to Washington selecting a high quarterback next year and changing the way that we look at their offense. But at least for now, yeah, he's the least exciting, I think, of the first round wide receivers, and certainly behind Christian Watson and Sky Moore from the second round for me.
Yeah, pretty easily. Again, like, I like Dotson. He's a good player, just, you know, a little bit undersized. And we've seen Carson Wentz throughout his career. He's really relied on those, you know, tall receivers that can go up and get it, right? Michael Pittman last year. Michael Pittman was, like, among the league leaders in contested targets because Wentz would just look his way a lot. And I know Michael Pittman was clearly the one in that team, so it kind of skews it a little bit. But you go back to Eagles, Alshon Jeffrey. So it's a clear target. And then the tight ends. We've seen Carson Wentz target the tight ends a ton. Even last year, like, Mo Alie-Cox, Jack Doyle, like, you know, they scored a lot of touchdowns. We know what the tight ends did in Philadelphia. So,
I wonder if you could
make the case Logan Thomas might be the number two in the passing game. But, like, Dotson will be very consistent. Like, he'll play in the slot. He won't drop passes. He'll be good. I just don't know the ceiling here in this offense.
Do you think it hurts McLaurin's target share potential? What was his target share last year? It was only 25%, which is good, but it's not elite. And I think what fantasy fans would like to see McLaurin would be to see him rise to, like, the 27, 28.
I guess the X factor is Curtis Samuel, right? Like, he
is true.
They had plans for him with Scott Turner there, who was spent time with him in Carolina. Like, they had plans to use him in a bunch of different ways. And I think he had, what, the groin injury in the preseason and just couldn't get back to full strength. Like, he was just out for so long. So, I mean, maybe the combination of Dotson, I don't think it's just one, like, Dotson coming in is going to hurt McLaurin's target totals that much. But maybe the combination of Samuel being hopefully healthy, Logan Thomas being there, and Jahan Dotson might be enough.
Who
knows? He'll probably get traded tomorrow because the receiver situation is insane. So he'll probably go to the Browns or something tomorrow.
I love McLaurin as much as the next guy, but his targets were just not as, you know, elite as I think we want them to be. So I'm a little concerned that this does prevent that from happening again. But not, you know, obviously I'm not scared off McLaurin, but it's just something I'm thinking about.
Let's close out the first round receivers with Treylon Burks. It's so interesting how this, and we'll pair this with the A.J. Brown trade. Eagles shockingly trade for A.J. Brown. The Titans get the Eagles 18th overall selection and waste no time drafting Treylon Burks, who, of course, got a lot of A.J. Brown comps during his time in Arkansas. Just, you know, size, speed, absolute freak athlete with incredible yards after the catch production. I mean, he slides into a very, very favorable spot because not only do you have A.J. Brown gone, and it's not going to be a high-volume passing offense, but right now he's competing for targets with a 30-year-old Robert Woods coming off a torn ACL and then Austin Hooper. And that is it. And Tannehill is, you know, he had a down year last year, but, like, Julio and A.J. Brown missed so much time. Tannehill is more than capable of, you know, he's still a good quarterback. And then, okay, Tannehill, he could be gone next year. We got Malik Willis. And Malik Willis could be good. Like, I know we got draft. He fell in the draft, but, like, Malik Willis could be really good still. We don't know that. And I think Treylon Burks is, it's so funny, too, because a lot of people had him pre-draft. Like, I don't know, you know, he could be really raw. Maybe, like, wide receiver 6, wide receiver 7 in this class. And at least for fantasy now, it's like, oh, he's probably a top 3 receiver.
Yeah, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Burks is a fantasy wide receiver 3 in redraft leagues. Right off the bat, I don't think I would really have an issue ranking him in the top 36. Maybe in the, it might be close, right? Like in the 32 to 38 range. But yeah, that's not a far reach to say that he's a
fantasy. So is he your wide receiver 1 among the rookies?
Among the rookies, yeah, he is.
Him and London are so close for me. I have him 38 and 39.
They are very, very close. But for right now, yeah, Burks would be my rookie wide receiver 1. I just think he lands in a better spot immediately. And I know dynasty people love to look at really long windows, but I don't think it's worth overlooking the first year, second year impact a player can have. I really don't know why the Titans did this, I guess to save money, but
yeah, I mean, they offered AJ Brown, I think $16 million, and he'd wanted more, and they were like, all right, well, we have to trade you. Yeah. I thought they could have gotten more for him personally, but
I don't even know exactly what the package was for him.
It was literally just 18 and then another pick in the draft, like 50th or something.
That's wild. I just don't get it because, like, if Treylon Burks pans out, what's his, like, his 99th percentile outcome is just being AJ Brown.
Exactly. And that's, like you said, very unlikely.
Yeah.
Right? Like you obviously see the comparables, right? You know, 6'3", 4'4", speed, 225 pounds, elite after the catch, 9.3 yards after the catch per reception last year, was 6th in the country. And I think the Titans aren't stupid. They see this. It was pretty, like, as soon as the trade happened, I think most people are like, oh, they're just going to take Treylon Burks. And they did. Yeah. And they're probably going to use him the same way, because a huge part of their offense with AJ Brown was quick screens, quick slants, letting him make plays after the catch. That's going to be a huge, I think Treylon Burks is going to see a ton of that. And, like, we know Derrick Henry is going to be back. They're going to run the football a ton. But again, like, he just doesn't have competition for targets. And I think Treylon Burks is still, like, the upside is top 30 receiver, I think, and maybe even slightly higher, because, again, he's competing for targets with, you know, a veteran tight end, a veteran receiver who I love, but is coming off a torn ACL. And then the rest of that depth chart is like Atlanta Falcons type bad. Like, it's terrible.
Yeah, I completely agree. Burks, it's a great spot for him. Yes, the situation around it is a little weird, but it is what it is. And so from a fantasy perspective, it's a good spot. I mean, he's not AJ Brown. I do think, I guess we can talk a little bit about AJ Brown now. Mm-hmm. I think it's at worst a side grade for Brown. In my opinion, it's actually a slight upgrade for him to go to the Eagles. I don't know exactly how you feel about it, but
I moved him down a little bit. He was like wide receiver 8. I moved him to like wide receiver 14. But it's like, I also like, it's not like he was in a tier of his own when he was wide receiver 8. He was right there with like CeeDee Lamb, Mike Evans. So like, this move is enough to like say, okay, CeeDee Lamb's going to get all the targets. Mike Evans is going to get a lot of targets. Plus, if Godwin misses time, like, it was enough to kind of move him below a lot of those players. But like, it's not like he's going from a pass heavy offense to a run first offense. He's going from one of the most run heavy offenses in the league to the most run heavy offense in the league last year. But like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like the offensive philosophy from the Titans to Eagles is massively different.
No, it's not. It's not. And I guess I think more highly of Jalen Hurts than most people. And I don't,
you would also think they're going to throw a little bit more, because it's weird, because remember last year,
they drafted, like, Devontae Smith.
Yeah, and the first like 6 weeks of the season last year, they were like one of the most pass-heavy offenses in the league, and it just made no sense. And then the second half, they, you know, Jalen Hurts' second half season was like 24 passing attempts per game. They ran the ball like well over 50% of the time, highest rate in the NFL, and that's when they started to click with behind that offensive line. I think they're kind of closer to the middle. Like, I don't think they're going to be top 10 in passing rate, but I don't think they're going to be, you know, 32nd or 31st either, especially after trading for one of the, you know, I would say Jit Brown's like a top 10 to 12 receiver in the league pretty easily.
Oh, for sure. I guess, I don't know, maybe I have to rethink my opinion that it's a side grade at worst or slight uptick of Brown. You have brought up good points, but
he's never been, like, the thing with AJ Brown is it's not like he's ever been a high volume player.
No, he hasn't.
He's been so impressive, right? I think he's around like 7-8 targets per game for his career. But we know, like we talked about with Burks, but like, he's always been elite after the catch. He's always been like top 10 in yards per target, which obviously, you know, and yards per out run, which are really two metrics we love for wide receivers. You look at like last season, 8.1 targets per game, which is good. It's not like elite, like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams, Keenan Allen type levels, right? But it's good enough, especially for a player as efficient and talented as AJ Brown. But like, you know, he was top 7 in yards per out run. You know, he had over 8 yards per target. He only needs like 7-8 targets per game to have a chance to still finish as a top 15 receiver.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he finished outside the top 15. I just think he's too talented not to. And the Eagles, again, giving up that much capital to get him, although you said maybe it wasn't as much capital as we thought, but they paid him, right? They turned around him and gave him like right. this big contract with a bunch of guaranteed money. He's going to see volume still. So I'm bottom line is I'm not scared about AJ Brown at all. Personally, I'm a little bit more excited about it. I just think the Titans offense is such a slog with Derrick Henry. And I don't think Ryan Tannehill is a long-term incredible quarterback. I think he's a little bit more of a game manager type quarterback to use the, you know, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but the term that's always used for quarterbacks that are not very exciting. And so from a dynasty perspective, Derrick Henry is on the last legs, I would argue. And Ryan Tannehill, maybe on his last legs. I think the fact they drafted Willis signifies that too. So from a dynasty perspective, I actually like Brown in Philadelphia more as well.
Yeah, and he does get the Eagles are going to play faster last season. I'm looking at our pace tool at FTN Daily. Eagles last season, they were right around league average in average seconds, or a little bit above league average in seconds per snap, 26.6. But the no-huddle percentage, they were... Let's see. No huddle percentage, they were top seven. They were six in no huddle rate at 15%. Titans were like 13th at around 11%. So that'll help AJ Brown too. What does this do for Devonta Smith? We kind of talked about it. And I mean, what does it do for Jalen Hurts, who already had like top five fantasy potential, but now you have AJ Brown, you have Devonta Smith, you have Dallas Goedert, and you also have Jalen Hurts, you know, ability to run with the football, and you're still behind an elite offensive line in Philadelphia. Like, could he be the quarterback one? Like, does he have the Josh Allen ceiling, or is it more like he's pretty much a lock to finish like in between like 3 to 7? I feel like it's going to be tough for him not to finish in that 3 to 7 range.
Yeah, I definitely think he's a lock to finish as a top 8 fantasy quarterback. This certainly locks him in as one of the better values. He's still not going as early in fantasy drafts as I think he should. Your question is, does he have that like Josh Allen fantasy QB1 ceiling in him? I mean, yeah, he does. He's a rushing quarterback who's got really elite weapons around him. I mean, Dallas Goedert is a good tight end too, pass catching tight end. So yeah, it's certainly within the range of outcomes for him. He would have to improve pretty significantly as a passer to make that happen, and or start running more near the goal line. But yeah, it's definitely possible. But I would be extremely comfortable with Hurts as my fantasy quarterback one now. I already was comfortable with it. And then you add AJ Brown and it just is icing on the cake.
Yeah, I think I had him around quarterback 8 or 9 before the trade and moved him up to like quarterback 6.
I think that's fair.
But like if you put him ahead of Kyler or Lamar or Tom Brady, I think that's perfectly fine. Like I have no issue with that at all.
I would not put him above Lamar, but... Yeah, the others I could see.
I think it's only a matter of time, by the way, till the Ravens sign Julio Jones. But I guess we can talk about that real quick, too. The Hollywood Brown trade, like the Ravens, I thought it was a great trade, right? Like you don't have to, right before you have to pay Hollywood Brown, not right before, but you know a little bit before, they got a higher draft pick than Hollywood Brown was selected as, got another pick after that. And then we know what the Ravens did in the draft. They were amazing. The Cardinals needed a deep threat. Like last year, they had nothing. They had, you know, occasional AJ Green deep balls. Of course, they brought AJ Green back. Rondale Moore just might have happened for him. I mean, we know Kyler and Hollywood played together in college. Yeah. Hopkins is there getting a 27% target share. You know, they still have AJ Green and Wesley. It's I traded Rondale Moore
for Moore.
Yeah, I traded Rondale Moore for Gabriel Davis like a month and a half ago. Would have done that regardless because, you know who you're talking to. But, yeah, I feel pretty good about that. It's his average at the target was under one. And I just don't think they know how to use him. And this was the concern with these receivers coming out that are this size. Like, if they don't have the best role and the Cardinals clearly didn't use him right, and all of a sudden now he's at best, like, fourth, maybe even fifth. Considering Zach Ertz is there and they added Trey McBride, like it's not good.
I think this is a pretty significant trade for fantasy, both for both teams. If you had to guess, you might know it off the top of your head, but if you had to guess, where do you think Marquise Brown ranked in targets last year?
Well, on stream, Larky said, I think that Hollywood Brown has had like a 25% target share in like each of the last 3 years or something like that. So I know pre-Lamar injury, he was getting absolutely, absolutely peppered with targets. But the drop-off probably was enough. So I would say, where did he rank total in targets, you asked? Like,
yeah.
10?
Yeah, exactly, 10th.
Okay, I didn't even look, I promise.
That actually surprises me, though, because you think of Baltimore.
The only reason it didn't surprise me is because I literally remember writing every week, and it's like, dude, he's getting – this isn't the Hollywood Brown of old where he's getting 5 targets. Yeah. Remember his rookie year where he popped off the Miami game and he kept popping off, but he's getting like 5 targets a game? I remember talking about it last year. It's like totally different. The occasional deep balls were there, but he was getting like 11, 10, 12 targets a lot more often.
That's a big shakeup, though, in Baltimore. I mean, they had 2 players rank in the top 10 in targets last year, Mark Andrews being the other. So that's a lot of targets leaving Baltimore. Obviously, Rashad Bateman is the big winner there. Do they sign another wide receiver or do they trade for somebody like Debo?
I think Julio's going there. I really do. I don't think San Francisco's trading Debo. I just don't think they're doing it.
I think they, if they were going to, it would have been during the draft.
Yeah. I don't think teams offered it. Like, I saw that the Lions and Jets made offers and San Francisco is like laughing. They're like, yeah, no.
I saw that too. It's a significant trade though. And Christian Kirk last year saw 103 targets, caught 77 balls for basically 1,000 yards and 5 touchdowns. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Hollywood Brown replicated those numbers. And what's funny is that is they basically had the same stat line. Christian Kirk and Hollywood Brown. Brown had more receptions just because he had so many more targets, but from a yardage perspective and touchdown perspective, it was very similar between Kirk and Brown. So you were mentioning players like AJ Green being more of the deep threat last year. I actually think Hollywood Brown's the deep threat, but I actually think that Arizona kind of just replaces Kirk's volume and production with Marquise Brown. And then, yeah, I think you're right. Rondell Moore's the big loser here.
And then on the opposite end, Rashad Bateman, a huge winner.
Yeah, a huge winner.
I mean, good luck trying to trade for him in Dynasty because loved him coming out of college, coming out of Minnesota. And now it's, I mean, you talked about the role Hollywood Brown had, right? 10th in targets.
That's going straight to Bateman.
Right. It's just, unless they bring somebody in, it's just, okay, Bateman and Mark Andrews. And then the running backs. And again, maybe it comes down a little bit because, like we talked about, Baltimore's passing rate skyrocketed last season because they were trailing in games more and their defense was depleted and their running backs were all hurt. But still, you know, say in a given game, say Lamar throws 32 passes in a game, right? Not per game, just in one game.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think 25 of them might go to Bateman and maybe not 25, but close to 25 of them might go to Bateman and Andrews.
Yeah, I mean, 25 out of 32. I don't know what that math checks out to, but
yeah,
I guess it's 20, possible.
25 is a stretch, but like 20.
20, yeah, no, for sure. It could easily be those two guys should easily account for 60 to 65% of the targets. I guess what is that math? Maybe that is right. 25 out of 32 is 78. So yeah,
there's probably, no shot. 20. Yeah, maybe 25 right? out of 35 if I want to go there. But like,
yeah.
The point being, Rashad Bateman moved all the way up to me. For me, he was like in that wide receiver 35 range, 40 range. And now I think he's like where I had like Cortland Sutton, which was like wide receiver 18, 17. And I don't even think that's a stretch. Like, love the player. He obviously missed a lot of the first part of the season due to injury, but then slowly started to get acclimated. Didn't really play with Lamar that much because when Bateman was in kind of full strength, Tyler Huntley was in because Lamar was hurt. So Rashad Bateman should be really fun in his second season.
I have a couple would you rathers with Bateman.
Go for it.
All right. Would you rather Bateman or DK Metcalf?
I think I want Bateman.
All right. Yeah. I mean, the quarterback situation, I will not deny, is terrifying in Seattle. How about Bateman or Brandon Cooks?
That one's really close. I'll lean Cooks, especially if like Julio or somebody signs in Baltimore. Like, Houston brought in John Mechie, but like John Mechie might miss time too, and that's it. Yeah. Like John Mechie's not like I talked about. Brennan Cooks had a massive target share, was like top 10 in percentage of teams' air yards, receiving yards, receptions, and he had at least a 25% target share in like 7 games last year. So I'll lean Cook still.
All right, and then this one, I think I know the answer: Bateman or Cortland Sutton. Oh my gosh, you're hesitating.
Because I think I have to go back and look. I think I literally have Sutton 17 and Bateman like 18 or 19. So Sutton, so close. It's close. Yeah, it's definitely close.
All right.
So it'll be interesting to see these players on new teams. Let's go to the second round where we start off with. Let's start with Breece Hall because we got to get Breece Hall in here. Goes the Jets trade up, kind of similar to the Jonathan Taylor selection that the Colts traded up early in the second round to get Jonathan Taylor. The Jets kind of do the same to select Breece Hall. And look, I mean, Michael Carter, good player, but undersized running back. The Jets clearly wanted to bring in Breece Hall. I think Michael Carter might get like, he might get like a Giovanni Bernard role. And I said that on stream because he got Gio Bernard comps coming out of North Carolina. It wouldn't surprise me given the trade up that the Jets made and the, you know, the way their offense is adding players, where like Breece just plays first and second down and plays some third downs, and then Carter gets mixed in on third downs. Is Breece Hall for me is the clear consensus 101 in both Superflex and traditional rookie drafts. Mm-hmm. And my question for you is like, is it just week one he's clearly the lead back, or do you think it's more of a, you know, what we've seen from rookie running backs the past couple of years, Jonathan Taylor second half season, J.K. Dobbins, Cam Akers, Miles Sanders in their rookie seasons, all kind of, you know, in that Javonte Williams role from last year, like 12, 13 touches a game. Javonte obviously didn't get the work that we wanted because Melvin Gordon was really good last year. But like, is this a situation where he gets like 12, 13 touches a game the first half and then kind of explodes for like 19 to 22 the second half and just kind of dominates? Because look, the Jets run blocking unit was really underrated last year, was really good, and they should be just as good this year. We'll see if they keep Mekhi Becton, but we know Robert Saleh wants to run the football. We know the running scheme from San Francisco in this Jets offense is really favorable for running backs, and we know Breece Hall is a stud.
Yeah, it's really hard to know exactly what they'll do at the very beginning of the year. I don't think it'll be long, though, before Hall is a tail end fantasy running back too. I think that's kind of roughly where Carter was landing last year, right? He was like running back two, maybe not your favorite that you would put in there. I think Hall, unless the Jets offense takes a big step forward, which I know we've talked about is very possible, I think Hall kind of just ends up occupying that same space, to be honest, in terms of volume and usage. If I was doing a redraft draft right now, I would probably take Hall in the same range as like AJ Dillon type player, Melvin Gordon.
Okay, so now, I have him a Melvin lot Gordon higher than you do. Broncos. I have him at like RB 20 right now, but I also moved Antonio Gibson down because Brian Robinson's there and McKissick's back.
I just don't think Carter like completely goes away.
I don't either. I just think he's clearly ahead of like Dylan and Kareem Hunt in that range, because like, I guess, it's still, yeah, that's a second just where I'm running viewing back him. On yeah. a, and I think he fits the offense really well, but I admittedly didn't love the landing spot because he got selected while we were on stream, and I was like, oh, the Jets, like I was, we all wanted Buffalo and Houston and where he could just come in and clearly get 20 carries a game, right? Like I love Singletary, right. But if the Bills drafted Breece Hall, he's getting 20 carries a game. I think he eventually will. I just don't know if it's in week one or
I
if it's in week seven.
I do think Carter is in the mix, could be September, even all the way through October. And if he does have that Gio role, it depends what kind of version of Gio Bernard you're talking about, but I don't have it in front of me. But as I recall earlier in his career, he was a pretty significant contributor on a weekly basis. Wasn't it like the Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard show?
It's literally what I talked about on stream. Like Gio was good when he got touches as the, you know, 1B or backup, but then also when he was thrust into starting role, he was great. Like Giovanni Bernard was a top 12 running back when
he was
Mixon or whoever was out. I could see a similar type of role here. I just think, you know, teams, we see it like over and over for the most part. It's like, when you have a smaller running back as your lead back, the next year they see an opportunity to draft a traditional like every down back mm-hmm. like Breece Hall, and that's what the Jets did. So I think it's kind of sooner rather than later. I think the fit is perfect though. According to PFF, last year Breece Hall had 175 rushing attempts on outside zones. That was top 12 in the entire nation. The Jets were top 10 in outside zone runs last year. That's going to be a huge part of their offense given the coaching tree and Robert Saleh and everything. So I think the fit is awesome. I think the Jets are a really underrated run blocking unit. So I think Breece, don't be surprised if Breece, like I think you draft him probably, let's say redraft. Where do you think he goes? Like fifth round, sixth round? Where did Javonte go last year? Right around that range probably, right?
I don't have it in front of me, but
I could pull it
yeah,
up.
Yeah, probably sixth.
I think he should go no later than where Javonte went last year. I'm going to pull it up, though. What do you think of... So you have him as the 101 in rookie draft still?
I think in a vacuum, yeah. Like if you're starting a fresh rookie draft and you need and you are not like totally loaded at running back, then yeah. Even in Superflex.
So Javonte Williams,
but he's not so far ahead of everybody else. I think I mentioned this at the beginning that like if you already have a lot of running backs, if he's not so far ahead of everybody else that I think he's a must draft.
Javonte Williams looks like he went RB 25, 60th overall last year.
So that's right at the end of the fifth round.
I think that's right where Breece Hall should go.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Perfectly reasonable.
I think sixth round. I don't know if I would do like end of fifth. I guess there's not a huge difference, but I would probably spend my sixth round pick on him at the earliest.
Let's go to, I want to just hammer out these running backs. Kenneth Walker, predictable Pete Carroll. I mean, this team has so many holes, and maybe this is a draft selection when you have Rashad Penny on a 1-year deal and we don't know the status and the future of Chris Carson, but Kenneth Walker goes to Seattle. There were the concerns of him not catching passes in college. Can he do it, or was he just not asked to do it? I don't think he's going to be asked to do it in Seattle, that's for sure. But we know this team wants to run the football. They've done it, you know, at a massive rate with one of the 10 best quarterbacks of the last 20 years in Russell Wilson. So I would expect them to run the football a lot with Drew Lock and Geno Smith and whoever at quarterback. What do you think of, like, is Kenneth Walker, because again, early second round, so pretty good draft capital. But with the way Rashad Penny ended the season last year, is he just coming in day one? Because I've seen a lot of back and forth with Kenneth Walker. Some people think he's just going to – a lot of people think it's a great spot for him. A lot of people think it's an awful spot. And I'm over here like, he's going to get work. Rashad Penny has had trouble staying on the field. We don't know if Chris Carson's going to play. And this time next year, both Carson and Penny could be off the roster. Then you have all Kenneth Walker.
Yeah. He's the he's the running back two in Dynasty still. The landing spot is definitely weird and much more complicated than we want it to be. But I do think the pick signals pretty bad news for Chris Carson at a very minimum.
Which like, sucks because I love Chris Carson.
True. But maybe the coaching staff maybe he's not rehabbing the way, or maybe they're just over him. But I don't think they make this pick if they really have a lot of long-term confidence in Chris Carson. So right off the bat, that's my first takeaway. And then the other player, obviously, that everyone's talking about is Rashad Penny. But I think you could still pretty easily make the argument that we don't really know if Penny is good still. I know he had a really, 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 really impressive stretch. Yeah, I mean,
he literally won fantasy championships.
He did. But that could put, you know, the rose tinted glasses on for people. He was also really horrible the first few years of his career as a first round pick, right? Like a player that we thought Seattle would feature just never materialized. So I am a believer in those stretch runs. So I don't think necessarily that Penny is bad, but I am just throwing it out there. It's definitely still a possibility that was just a few good games strung together. I mean, Joe Flacco and Nick Foles both won Super Bowls, and they're not, you know, amazing quarterbacks because of four really good playoff games in a row. So I guess what I'm trying to say in a really roundabout way is that I also think that this is a fine landing spot for Walker. It's not the best landing spot from a dynasty perspective. I think it's fine. There's really nothing exciting about it though. So if your team, I'm doing this in a couple dynasty leagues. If your team is pretty set this year, pretty solid, I don't have any problem trading out of this year's first round into next year's first round, just because I don't think these players are landing in as good of spots or as talented to overcome bad situations as we might see in next year's class.
It's totally fair. Let's go to a couple other running backs before we get to these round two receivers and we'll get out of here, because there were a lot of players in the second round that are fantasy relevant. What do you think of the James Cook move by Buffalo? I was on stream when this pick happened. I thought it was a spectacular real-life selection by the Buffalo Bills. It's been no secret Brandon Bean has been trying to upgrade at pass catching running back. They were very close to having J.D. McKissic on their team. They were apparently going to draft Travis Etienne last year before Jacksonville did. They were very high on Travis Etienne. And as much as I love Devin Singletary, he has been a very below average pass catching running back since entering the NFL. Last year among running backs, qualified running backs, only Sony Michel had fewer yards per route run than Devin Singletary. And the Bills last year targeted running backs 16% of the time. That was one of the lowest rates in the NFL. Now you bring in James Cook, who was a mismatch for linebackers everywhere in college last year. Really explosive. Adds, you know, after the catch ability. I see tweets and stuff like, oh, Devin Singletary season, you know, it's over. Like, absolutely not. It's not like great news. You're not moving Singletary up. His pass catching upside is already like low, and it's even lower now. But they're not giving James Cook. I saw Jeff Ratcliffe's early projection for James Cook. I think he had a projected for 96 carries, and Zach Moss is clearly phased out. Devin Singletary is getting a lot of carries. I'm not worried about Singletary at all. Shocker. But I also think this is an awesome move for the Buffalo Bills offense.
I love it. I mean, I just give Josh Allen all the weapons. That's my motto. So the fact the fact that they did this, and then I don't know if it happened the night of or the next day, but they were like, but the Buffalo Brass was like, yeah, we kind of view him as like a wide receiver.
Yep, that was Brandon awesome. Bean said that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So
that alone should tell you that they still love Singletary as the running back.
Yeah. I do think this hurts Singletary maybe more than I think you're letting on.
I think it hurts his upside overall, but I think he's getting
the reason we really loved him in the playoffs and down the stretch was because he was catching passes.
It was a little bit more, yeah. But he was also getting all the goal line work and converting, which is I think more important, because that was the main concern. Why, like, it was like, oh, should we draft Singletary or Zach Moss? Everybody's like, don't draft either one of them because Josh Allen's going to take the touchdown. That we saw Singletary really productive in that goal line role last year.
So how do you do like AJ Dillon and Devin Singletary now?
I mean, I had Singletary higher and I still do.
Okay.
This was a hot take, but I said I would rather have Singletary over Antonio Gibson.
No, that's a Buffalo Bills take.
I don't like, I get it, but like, they're not too dissimilar. They both have a pass catcher running back that's going to take work away. But now, like, Washington brought in Brian Robinson, who's a goal line back. Like, they clearly don't want to give Gibson a lot of work. Like, if you moved Gibson Singletary down a lot, like, I guess I get it. I just think, and I understand receptions are what we want because it unlocks that upside. I just think Singletary is getting 15, 18 carries a game on one of the three best offenses in football. And while I don't necessarily believe it until I see it, they keep talking about, we want Josh to run less. Again, I'll believe when I see it, but I still have Singletary in that like RB 22 to 25 range. I'm not too worried.
No, I think that's totally fair. The 20 to 25 range is where I would put him to. I just think previously he was more in like the 14 to 16 range.
So I didn't even have him that high before this.
You don't think I was thinking he would be like a high end RB. I mean, who else was going to catch passes for out of the Bills backfield last year? Or next year.
Yeah, I just expect, like, I knew they were going to draft a running back. And I'm actually glad they drafted James White and not, James Cook and not Rashad White. Because Rashad White actually has the build to be, like, an every down mm-hmm. back. Whereas, like, James Cook, he's just, I don't think he's going to do that for Buffalo. So,
no,
I think
he's not.
I think he'll have some PPR appeal in some given weeks, right? Like, He'll have some like 4 or 5 catch games. I think he's a guy you can draft at the end of rookie draft, or definitely in rookie drafts. I think you can draft him at the end of, you know, redraft leagues. I don't think James Cook is a first rounder in rookie drafts. I think he's like a mid second, and I think that's fine.
I think that's fine too. Do you think his like upside is James White?
I do. Like, I think that's how he's going to be used. I think that, like, I think I thought that was going to be how he was used his entire college career. Like, I was like, once he goes to the NFL, he's going to be used like that. Like, and you know, Jeff Ratcliffe projections, rankings, he's the best. He's the best in the business. Under 100 carries, that tells me it's going to be the same kind of role, right? Like, just run routes, mismatch against linebackers, and just, again, just Bills will pick teams apart. Any other running backs? Like, we had Damian Pierce go to Houston. That was interesting. Round 4 pick. You don't love the draft capital, but, like, I tweeted this. Rex Burke had averaged, like, from week 11 to 18 last year, he averaged, like, 17 touches per game.
Burke had won people so much money down the stretch.
And now you have Damian. Like, if Damian Pierce can't beat out Burkhead, Marlon Mack, and, you know, Dare, it's probably not going to be a good career for Damian Pierce. We never saw him asked to be the lead back at Florida. So, like, there's concern. I know Josh Larkin is talking about it. Like, if we have not seen a running back as the full-time back in college, there's no reason to suggest he will do that in the NFL level. But among landing spots, like, he should be able to carve out a starting role on this team. And Lovie Smith's there. He already talked about in the offseason. He wants to run the football, so.
I'll just bring up two others. One, we saw the 49ers spend another day two pick on a running back. So that's, I mean, Trey Sermon, that just looks really bad for him.
Yeah, and I liked him as a zero RB guy, too.
I spent a first round rookie pick on him last year, and I honestly feel like it might already be toast. And then Brian Robinson was like the big WTF moment. So I wish I could say like, oh, I know exactly what's going to happen in Washington now. I don't. I mean, I could completely see a scenario where Robinson becomes the early down back and it almost completely phases out Antonio Gibson. So I do understand where you're coming from when you say that you might have someone like Singletary ranked above Gibson. I don't think that happens, at least in
what I worry about is,
but it could.
And if they want Brian Robinson, who was so good as a goal line back, if they want him to be the goal line back, all of a sudden Gibson's getting the least valuable touches in football, and that's the carries from between the 20s. And if McKissick's playing passing downs and Brian Robinson's getting goal line backs or goal line work as the goal line back, you're getting maybe 15 carries a game from Gibson, but they're low value touches.
I just think it's a bad sign for Gibson that the coaching staff like refuses to just let him be the guy.
Right? And they like visited with like 10 different running backs before the draft too.
And
like,
they did. And they didn't let McKissick get away.
Yep.
It's so funny because Gibson has genuinely been really good for them. Like there hasn't been a facet of his game that's been like, oh, they need another running back. I think they would have been completely fine if McKissick left. And I'm not just talking as a fantasy fan. Like I think Gibson can really handle that role, but yeah, that was the big curveball. So
yeah, McKissick is also legitimately one of the three best pass blocking running backs in the league too. So like that's obviously valuable. Like they want him on the field for that. So I'll add one again, Rashad White to Tampa Bay. He's probably he's going to compete with Giovanni Bernard for that role. I loved Rashad White coming out. There's a chance, you know, this August when you're doing drafts that he's the handcuff to Leonard Fournette. And that is, we saw Leonard Fournette, the targets he got. I think he's a guy you can draft late. And
yeah, White,
there's a lot of excitement there for me.
White caught a lot of passes. I think White's really interesting in Dynasty. you know, Fournette is not going to be great for too much longer. Tom Brady, who knows, this is most likely his last year. So
it's not.
You don't think so?
I'm just joking. Like I just assume it's not.
I guess who knows.
He has to retire for like 3 years for me to be like, okay, he really is done. Like it's over.
I do think though that Rashad White being there is potentially bad for Fournette and his usage in the passing game. I think that, like, that, you know, that's just what White does. And now the Bucks will have both White and Geo there, so it won't really have to always be Fournette. But at the same time, it's clear that, you know, Brady loves Fournette, and probably the players that Brady really wants to be out there are the ones that are going to end up being out there. So it's just something to think about.
All right, let's close out with a lot of these second and third round receivers, and let's start with the two that stand out the most to me. And I'll add George Pickens to Pittsburgh. I thought that was their offense could be really fun. But Christian Watson, early second round of the Green Bay Packers, 34th overall. They also added Romeo Dubs on Saturday. I mean, Christian, it was so funny when he got drafted because everybody said, oh, they just replaced MVS with MVS because MVS issues with drops, size, speed combo is incredible. Christian Watson, 6'4", like 210 or two whatever, 215, massive, four with like a 4.3, 6.40, but he had a 13% career drop rate, and he didn't always play to his size. But the opportunity, if he can kind of just work on some things and emerge as that one, I mean, I don't think I'd be stunned if Christian Watson was the number one scoring rookie receiver this season. And then the same can be said potentially for Sky Moore. Maybe not this year because you still have Juju and Travis Kelce there, but Sky Moore to the Chiefs, a very popular landing spot. Juju's on a one-year deal. Mecole Hardman's not been a consistent player for them, and you have 160, 150 targets to replace from Tyreek Hill. How excited are should we be, I guess, on Christian Watson and Sky Moore? And then also, what did you think of George Pickens to the Pittsburgh Steelers? And look, any other receivers, right? Alec Pierce to the Colts, I think, is interesting. The one that's not interesting to me, we talked about it before getting on the podcast, I think the Wandale Robinson selection might have been the worst in the entire draft. I'm very serious when I say this. It made no sense. Unless you're trading Kadarius Toney this week, that selection makes zero sense to me.
All right, so Christian Watson, I agree with you. It would not surprise me if he ended up being the top scoring rookie receiver. The targets we mentioned earlier are just wide open in Green Bay right now. And the competition for targets is not very serious. I mean, Alan Lazard is not... When was Alan Lazard drafted? I don't even know what his draft capital was, but he's not a player that Christian Watson should have much difficulty overtaking as the number one target in Green Bay, which we know is extremely lucrative for fantasy. So
also, he was a second round pick, not Lazard, Watson.
Yeah.
That means he's guaranteed to be good for Green Bay because Jordy Nelson, Greg Jennings, Devontae Adams, all second round picks. So it's a lot. Alan Lazard, by the way, was undrafted. I thought he was. I wasn't sure he was undrafted.
Okay. Yeah. I knew he didn't have high capital. I didn't know he was undrafted though. But yeah, Watson, it's a great landing spot. Obviously, not a lot to add there. Same with Sky Moore. We talked about it last week on the pod, but we love Sky Moore. Love the landing spot. Obviously, you're going into play with Patrick Mahomes. You're now locked with him for an extremely long time. Great, great landing spot. Not as exciting in redraft, like you mentioned. So not a lot to add there. I was pretty surprised with how far George Pickens fell. I guess I was just higher on him than... Mm-hmm. Other teams, I really thought that there was a chance that he would actually go at the end of the first round. I know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people expected him to. So talented.
Yeah. When we got to when we got to Baltimore, even because they had already traded Marquise Brown at that point. So when we got to Baltimore and then the Packers twice and then the Patriots and then even the Vikings or the Chiefs and then the Vikings at the end, I actually thought they could have done it. He ended up falling pretty far, but still second round draft capital. So that's still really good. He went to the Pittsburgh, which is pretty bad news for Chase Claypool, I think is the takeaway there. Maybe Pittsburgh isn't as big of a believer in Claypool as they were a year ago, but having three good receivers never hurt. So Pittsburgh becomes very interesting, especially if Pickens becomes pans out as a first round pick. Pickett pans out as a first round quarterback there. The only
Deontay
one that
Johnson is a UFA next year too. There's been like talks about like they want to bring him back and extend him, but they haven't done it yet. So I wonder how much that has to do with it too. But dude,
this is going to wreck me. Pickett and Pickens on the same team.
We didn't even talk about it though. Like if Kenny Pickett is decent, he's got really
loaded
good.
Oh yeah, my I gosh. Mean, loaded.
You got George Pickens, Calvin Austin, who's like a 4.3 speedster. Deontay, Claypool, Najee Harris, and Pat. Like, that is a sick group on offense.
It is a sick group.
George Pickens, by the way, broke out at age 19 at Georgia. 12 games, 49 catches, 727, and 8 touchdowns. Like, you'd love to see players break out at that age.
I thought he was going in the first round for sure. It's still a good spot. I don't love the – it's a good spot, but it's not as good as it could be, I should say, because, you know, Claypool's there. Deontay Johnson's going to see a ton of targets. We just talked about this. And then, yeah, you mentioned Wandale Robinson as potentially the worst pick of the entire draft. It's hard to disagree with that. Just from like a need perspective, the Giants already had a lot of receivers. He's basically just a worst version of Kadarius Toney, who they spent a first round draft pick on last year. I know there's been talk of Toney being traded. So if they do trade him, this becomes, I guess this starts to make sense. I do think there were better receivers they could have taken there.
They could have just got Calvin Austin.
I know. It doesn't make sense to me.
What, the fifth to Pittsburgh?
So like, we're doing this rookie draft, right? And I was just up at 2.5. And I took Robinson there. And we were just talking about it before this aired. I don't feel good about that. I really don't. I took him there because the only way that the pick makes sense to me is if the Giants trade Toney away. Mm-hmm. So if the Giants don't trade Toney away, then yeah, my 2.5, picking Robinson there at 2.5, I don't feel good about. But I guess the Giants have plans for him. I mean, they would not.
I mean, you gotta look at also who their head coach is now. Brian Daboll, who worked with Isaiah McKenzie last year, in the same way they're probably going to use Wandale Robinson. But
what about Toney? Overall, that doesn't make sense.
43rd overall. There was a ton of players in that mold in this draft. Calvin Austin, who went, again, like I said, what, fifth, sixth round to Pittsburgh. You could have just waited and drafted him and played him in that same role if you were planning on keeping Toney or not. It doesn't really matter. Like, it's not like the Giants were a team that didn't have any other, you know, positions they needed to address. I just really didn't like that selection for them. There was a couple other receivers that are interesting. Alec Pierce, I thought they should have went Sky Moore over Alec Pierce. Alec Pierce went ahead of Sky Moore. Yeah. Alec Pierce and Pittman are a little bit more like, Pierce needs to work on his route running. He's really athletic, but like, Pittman and Sky Moore would complement each other so well. I thought Sky Moore was a perfect fit there, but Alec Pierce will be early to mid second round rookie draft selection. He's got an opportunity there. And then David Bell to Cleveland's kind of interesting, right? Like, right now, he has a really, unless they bring Jarvis Landry back, which is possible, he has a great chance to walk into week one as a number two if he beats out Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yeah, it is a good landing spot, especially.
Oh, I lied, by the way. Sorry. The worst pick of the draft was Velus Jones at 71 overall.
Dude's
going to be 25, and he's played six college seasons and has 120 receptions. They literally drafted a return man to help Justin Fields.
I do not understand what the egregious. Bears did there. I know we've gone over our love for Fields, and it did not go well during the draft. No, Bell. I like Bell's spot. You mentioned that. I guess it's looking like Deshaun Watson will probably play. So, yeah, I think any of his receivers at that point become interesting and viable.
Trying to see. I mean, Trey McBride is going to be like after Zach Ertz at tight end, but like really productive player in college.
What do you think about Tyquan Thornton to the Pats?
I mean, clearly they made an effort to add speed in this draft, right? They drafted Tyquan Thornton and they drafted, what, Pierre Strong? On Saturday.
The fastest receiver and fastest running back.
So clearly an effort there by them. Like, I wouldn't have gone that direction. I would have gone receiver where they did. But I think because Thornton went ahead, like, he went ahead of Sky Moore too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Very weird. Sky Moore fell a little bit more than I thought he would. John Mechie, he'll have an opportunity if he plays to be the clear number two behind Brandon Cook. So he's appealing there. Again, second round rookie draft selection for sure.
Trey McBride, I know he's tight end here, but that is a weird landing spot just because the tight end room has Max Williams and Zach Ertz. So McBride, I think, is still the tight end one for Dynasty, but the redraft potential is pretty much zero, I think, for McBride this year.
Yeah, and the Giants, I actually liked the way they went at tight end. like their tight end room is pretty wide open right now. It's like Ricky Seals-Jones and then just really not much else. Obviously, Rudolph's not there anymore. Evan Ingram's in Jacksonville. So opportunity there. And then, I mean, Jalen Tolbert to Dallas is kind of interesting. He's, you know, he kind of got like Marvin Jones comps.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows if Michael Gallup's going to be there in week one or even a couple weeks after. So like Jalen Tolbert has an opportunity to be the wide receiver two in Dallas for some part of the season. Receivers?
I will not stand for that Gallup slander, but I'll let you do it, I guess.
Listen, he's not taking Gallup's job when Gallup's healthy. But Bo Melton, seventh round. I was sick. Bo Melton is not a seventh round player. Come on, NFL. What are we doing? He went to, and of course, like he didn't even go to a team where he can carve out. He went to Seattle, like of all teams, like he's behind Metcalf and Lockett. Buffalo. How about Khalil Shakir? He could take Jameson Crowder's job, like by week five in the slot.
Oh, he absolutely could. I like it. I mean, that's another player that the Giants could have waited and drafted.
Yep.
I like it. We said this earlier, just give Josh Allen all the weapons. And Jameson Crowder does not raise excitement with a player like Allen. So, yeah, I like it a lot.
It's funny, too. Like I mentioned Romeo Dubs to Green Bay, and I looked at a lot of, like, you know, comparisons. Obviously, the MVS and Christian Watson comparisons, but then, like, Romeo Dubs has, like, Devontae Adams comps. So Green Bay clearly has a plan of, like, the type of receiver they're trying to bring in during this draft, so that's kind of funny. Two running backs we can talk about. Isaiah Spiller to the Chargers, which we've seen them look for more from, you know, Josh Kelly, Justin Jackson, who I think is a free agent. So Spiller has a chance to be the clear number two. I don't think this really hurts Eckler. Spiller, obviously, like, he's not going to do much. And then Zamir White, like, we get, what, Friday or Saturday? Or it had to have been Friday, that the Raiders aren't picking up Josh Jacobs' fifth-year option. And then they trade up and draft Zamir White. They also brought in Brandon Bolden in the offseason. They also brought in Amir Abdul in the offseason. And Josh McDaniels, when he got there, was talking about how it's important to have multiple running backs. So Josh Jacobs definitely moved down my rankings this past weekend for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. What, maybe the biggest veteran loser among running backs, even more than Antonio Gibson.
Talk about listening to what teams are telling you. I mean, it was right there. Back-to-back yeah. days.
It was.
Anything else? I mean, Sam Howell to Washington, Malik Willis to Tennessee, the quarterbacks. Sam Howell could start some games this year.
I'll mention Pierre Strong. Going to the Pats is, I think that signals that this might be Damian Harris's last year, and Strong could even, you know, significantly carve into Harris's role this year. But the Pats running back room is confusing. I mean, it's Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, Pierre Strong now. James White is now back. So not totally sure what to make of it, other than Damian Harris is no longer locked in as a fantasy RB2.
And I will close out with this. It is not a receiver. It's not a tight end. It's not a quarterback. It's not a running back. The best draft pick of this draft, 140th overall, Green Bay selects Zach Tom, offensive tackle from Wake Forest. Again, a player I thought was like a second or third round talent. That offensive line, get Elgton Jenkins back, get David Bakhtiar. I think Green Bay is, they get a lot of jokes lately. I thought they had a good draft. I really do. Because it's not like the receivers in the first round were there for them when they were up, right? Like, everybody was gone. So, like, Zach Tom is one of my favorite players in this class, and I think that was one of my favorite picks. What's your favorite pick of the draft before we get out of here?
Ooh, I guess the question is real football or fantasy football?
Either one, because the Zach Tom one, clearly, I don't think Zach Tom's scoring any fantasy points this year.
That's true. All right, so from a real football perspective, I actually really like Malik Willis in like the late third round to the Titans.
I hope he balls out. I really
do. Yeah, me too. So I just don't think that is, I don't think Tannehill's the answer there. And I think Malik Willis, I think that was just good value. And then from a fantasy perspective, I actually really like, you just mentioned this, but I like Spiller going to the Chargers in the fourth. So it doesn't create this big scare for Austin Eckler. I've always been an Eckler stan. I completely agree with you that this does not change my opinion from Eckler. I guess like he gets a slight downgrade now that he won't do everything, but they were never going to have him do everything anyway. And I actually think it creates a scenario where both Eckler and Spiller can become weekly viable fantasy players. So I like that pick for fantasy a lot. It like preserves the greatness of Austin Eckler, but also creates opportunity for Spiller to have his own role too.
Exciting draft for sure. Not just the like between the player movement again with player trades, but also like the trades of draft picks, like teams moving up, moving back. It was insane. One of the
it was crazy.
And they talked about it. They're like this, but like they were like, buckle up. This is gonna be one of the most wild drafts, and it really was. So now we adjust. And
Chicago was asleep at the wheel the whole time.
Just don't get it. Darnell Mooney. Mad. We need to talk about it. Darnell Mooney's going to have like a 30% target share.
He is.
I'm here for it. Just don't get why he didn't add more talent, but we'll see. And now, and this is where we you know adjust the rankings and start our rookie drafts, and we get ready for. Look, there's nothing else left but preseason, right? NFL drafts over, free agency's over. A couple players will probably sign, right? We're waiting for Jarvis Landry, Will Fuller, Julio Jones, but. This is it, man. Like, we have landing spots and now we're ready to sprint into the 2022-23 season. So excited. Hopefully you enjoyed the draft weekend and all the content. I got to give a shout out to Josh Larkey, Chris Meany for hosting the stream all weekend, but also the producers, right? George, Quan, Fox, Thomas Viola, like the work they did behind the scenes on those shows. Unbelievable in terms of the graphics and staying up and helping with that. Like, shout out, amazing stuff, everybody at FTN. It was a great job. You know, Daniel Kelly and you, Tyler, for doing the live chat on Thursday night. And then, you know, Jeff obviously updating his rankings and Josh and Jeff doing immediate reactions. And we're gonna have more content at FTN throughout the entire week, recapping the draft, winners and losers and stuff like that. So keep it locked in. Tyler, any closing thoughts before we go to bed? It's late here. It's midnight.
Yeah, well, we're past the big hurdle. Now it's time for some more real football talk coming up soon. I know it's kind of far away still, but I get excited after the draft.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So appreciate everybody listening. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, all that great stuff on iTunes, podcast platform, wherever you listen to. And we'll be back. This is the FTN DataCast presented by the FTN Network. Have a good one. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at APfeiffer24 and at LochnerNFL.